Right now, however, we want to welcome to our program, as we begin this second hour, Paul Eisenstein, who is the editor of the Detroit Bureau, because we are in the thick. This is the first day that the doors have opened to the public on the Detroit Auto Show, otherwise known as the North American International Auto Show. And Paul, welcome to the show again. Good to have you with us.
Good to be with you.
Yeah, last week you had talked with us from the perspective of the press week that had been going on, and this week the doors have been flung open, and sounds like, from the reports, that people are flocking to the Detroit Auto Show.
Yeah, it looks pretty darn busy down there. It's certainly busy during the media days, and it was busy as heck last night for the prom night, as we like to call it.
Yeah, they raised lots of money, didn't they?
Yeah. What was it, $5 million?
Yeah, over five, seven figure. Or something, yep.
It was a great time to see and be seen. Were you down there, Paul?
Yeah, I was down there last night. It was a lot of fun to be down there. Just about every executive I could imagine was down there. Mark Fields. I didn't see Sergio Marchionne, but I did see Mark. I saw Mark Royce from GM and a lot of others.
Yep, it was, as I said, to see and to be seen. It's quite the social event. Gary, you've been down there for that, haven't you?
Yeah, many times, so.
Yeah, it is. It's quite an event. Now, Paul, let's talk about the show itself. And what were some of the highlights for you of the show?
Oh, boy, there were a lot. And one in particular I'll get to, which I think really plays to your audience. One of the surprises, I think, for a lot of people was the Kia Stinger, of all things, and was a production version of a wildly popular concept car we first saw in Frankfurt at the auto show in 2011, then called the Kia GT. It's a surprisingly big car, surprisingly fast car, and it's their first real Gran Turismo, or sports car if you prefer. Gorgeous vehicle. And I think, let's put it this way. I ran into Bob Lutz. We all know Maximum Bob, the former GM, vice chairman and product chief. And he was raving about it in a conversation to Ed Welburn, GM's former design director. That was one. Two, actually, which I'll talk about that were very good for your audience. One, on Sunday, the semi-official first day of the auto show, we saw the Waymo Chrysler Pacifica, the modified version of the Pacifica hybrid minivan that will be going into fleet testing by Waymo, the former Google autonomous vehicle unit. And then another high-tech car which we saw was the Volkswagen ID Buzz. And that has really gotten us, as its name implies, a lot of buzz because it's an electric autonomous version of the old VW microbus. There's a good chance that we may see, maybe without the autonomous technology, but we may finally see a return of the classic microbus, the old hippie van.
Oh, listen, that was my heartbeat. Matter of fact, even the color, because back in 1976, we had one of those with a pop-up top.
And the peace symbol?
Definitely. The peace symbol and the whole shooting match.
Oh, the tie-dye T-shirts makes perfect sense now.
Yeah. We loved it. That's where we took our girls on vacations. It was the perfect vehicle for a young family at that time. And so is it an autonomous vehicle?
If I remember correctly, they were saying that there was autonomous technology. Anything that's a concept today will have quote-unquote autonomous technology on board.
Okay.
Whether or not it's real or not isn't important. The thing is, everybody's trying to talk about how they will get autonomous technology out there and not the too distant future. But that's worth a conversation if you want to get into that for a second. We can talk about whether autonomous is really coming.
Is it really coming?
Yeah, all right, go ahead.
Well, this is an interesting subject, and it came up first very strongly at the Consumer Electronics Show, which we talked about recently, and now at the Detroit show as well. There are a variety of different versions or levels of autonomous technology. For those who aren't familiar with it.
Five levels, right?
Yeah, it goes from level one, which is pretty much what we have out there right now, stuff that can intervene when necessary.
Mm-hmm.
Emergency auto braking is a good example. Then level two and level three are various versions of semi-autonomous, or some will call them autonomous, where the car can allow you to do a certain amount of hands-off driving. It may just be in limited situations, but you can take your hands off at least briefly. But you better be darn ready to regain control very, very quickly in a problem. Level 4 takes you up to something where you're pretty much hands-free, and you're not going to have to worry about grabbing controls. But it may be limited in what they call geofencing. It may be only under certain conditions.
Yeah, right.
Heavy snowstorms, maybe it won't work. If you go into remote areas where they haven't mapped it well, it won't work. And then there's level 5, and that's where we're going, at least a lot of people believe, where it will be always automatic, and there may not even be a steering wheel.
All right. Well, listen, Paul, hang on a second. Paul Eisenstein is with us. He's the editor of the Detroit Bureau. When we come back, let's see where we are in that process of those 5 things of the autonomy, and see if we can get a fix on what the most active ones are that we're going to be seeing in the near future. Coming up in just a moment. Thank you for joining us here for hour number 2 of the Internet Advisor, Foster Brown, co-host and producer of the program, Gary Baker, Ed Riddell, and we also have Shane Hamlin in studio with us. You've been our silent partner here, Shane. We've got to get you talking again.
I'm listening to all this great tech stuff.
Isn't it? It's fascinating. Absolutely fascinating.
Some great stuff out there.
And with us online is Paul Eisenstein. Paul is the editor of the Detroit Bureau, and we're talking about probably one of the underlying big themes, which is autonomy. How much autonomy is going to be built, is being built into our cars right now, and you know, where we are in that race and who's in front. And it's, Paul, you just outlined, for instance, 5 levels of autonomy really that are out there, some which are already here. For instance, like the intervention in braking technologies is a way of, you know, if you get too close to a car in front of you, the car itself will stop or will brake within a certain distance. And, you know, that's a very important part of technology that's already here. But then we can also go on all the way to level number 5, which is where it's always controlling everything in the car. So where are we practically speaking right now? Where is the cutting edge right now, Paul?
Right now, level 1 is becoming very common. And even level 2, where you can take hands off a little bit to some degree or another, and Tesla models with their autopilot, Mercedes has a little bit. You know, it's a little bit fuzzy where the lines are between one level and another. The thing is that there is a growing pushback from some folks, including the man who heads the program over at Toyota, Gil Pratt, who used to be at DARPA. They were the DARPA Challenge was right. One of the things that basically invented the concept of autonomous technology as we know it.
Right.
And he's been pushing back, as have several other people, saying it may be a little bit longer before we get to really, really true autonomy. Some people are saying it could be more than a decade before we get to the point where it's truly all the time hands off. And yet we have others. Elon Musk over at Tesla, and the folks over at Faraday Future, which are starting to talk like it could be here even before 2020. So it's a real debate in the world out there. And part of it is everybody fuzzes which version of autonomy they're talking about. We're going to wait and see. I think we'll get a better feeling in probably another 2 years when we're going to start seeing real hands-free vehicles on the road, and how often, how much you'll be able to operate in hands-free mode, how long, if you will.
I'm going to guess that also it depends on where, the circumstances for that. For instance, I'm thinking like an HOV lane, high occupancy vehicle, that, like in Chicago, I remember seeing those HOV lanes. In other words, that there is a place on the road that is segregated for a certain kind of a vehicle.
That may happen. We may, in fact, see that that some cities will put in HOV lanes and convert those over to autonomous vehicle lanes. Mm-hmm. That is one possibility. What Gil Pratt from the Toyota Research Institute said is he does not believe that we'll be able to get there in the near term in the most densely crowded cities.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've ever been to China. I have numerous times, and driving the roads there can be a frightening thing. They officially admit to, 75,000 deaths on their highway a year. The actual number, according to some global organizations, safety organizations, is more like a 250,000 annually. And when you consider how many fewer cars they have on the road, they sell more there each year, but they don't have a big backlog of cars like we do, you know, basically almost one per person. And if you go into some cities, it is total chaos. It's like a cartoon, the way people drive. And Pratt is convinced that literally we do not have the computing power available. And you want to hear one of the strangest things that I had never thought about? I reported on this from CES because of Pratt, but it was the first time I ever heard this limitation. He said one of the reasons we may not get there as quickly as we thought is because we simply won't have enough power to support the computing power. In other words, vehicles will not have enough electricity that they can provide to enough computing power to handle all the smarts necessary to process driving in, say, a Beijing rush hour on some of their public streets. And we won't have the cooling power either. So that's an interesting issue, which I had never thought about before.
Ed, you had a thought on it?
Yeah, flux capacitor.
But there's an enormous, you're right, there's an enormous amount of power that's being required to drive all these different things. And, you know, we're asking a lot of the equipment we have.
You know,
exactly.
You know, Paul, I think that a lot of it has to do with framing the question in the right way, and then not, and then you can understand the answer. Gil Pratt is looking at, you know, emerging economies and third world countries and saying, just can't get there. Tesla, Elon Musk, is saying, I'm almost there now. And he's not selling many Teslas in China.
Yeah. Well, he wants to.
He
would sell all he could there if he could.
But the point is, he may be right, and Pratt may be right, that we might have it here in the U.S. and in Western Europe long before, and other places around the world, but long before they'll have it everywhere in the world.
Hmm. Well, I am very skeptical of what Elon Musk is saying, in part because if you look at what he's claiming he can do and what he's using to do it, his people must be incredible geniuses because they took the camera system out. Remember, they got into a pissing match with, I hope I can say that on the air, with Mobileye,
<You did. laughs>
the Israeli firm that had provided its cameras for Tesla. And then there was a whole flap when that one former Navy SEAL was killed down in Florida last May.
Right.
And now they've upgraded their radar and sonar technology, and they're claiming they can do pretty much serious full autonomy. They're not saying what level.
Mm-hmm.
Using just radar. And nobody else buys that. Everybody else says you have to use LIDAR, which, as you know, is 3D high-definition laser technology. In fact, multiple LIDAR units. And so that's a big question. Now, we did see Google come up with their newest version, as I said, at the auto show the other day. And it was based on a Chrysler Pacific, a hybrid. And it's loaded. I mean, if you look at it, it's got all sorts of gear hanging off of it in every way. It's got a unit up on top where they have LIDAR and radar, and that looks like they had put one of those big boxes that people put on top of their vehicles when they're going, you know, cross country.
Oh, yes, yeah, right.
And they run out of space for the kids' clothing. So, you know, how come Google, which is so good, needs all that gear, and Tesla can basically do it all with a couple of radar units under the grill? I have a hard time believing that.
Yeah, there's a lot.
My only concern about that, Paul, is that think about all the people that said Tesla, Elon Musk. How could he ever launch his own rockets? You know, that would be ridiculous, right?
Rocketry is simple compared to putting a car on the road and having 1,000 other cars coming at you from every direction in a Chinese or even in a, we live here in Detroit. You want to try dealing with the 96, 696, 275 Michigan 5 interchange over at Novi? think about. You have cars coming from every direction, and lots of them, and people who don't know what they're doing. It's much more complicated than you think, because you just have so many vehicles to track and calculate.
Yeah, and then put a snowstorm on top of that.
Exactly.
To complicate even more. Paul, thank you. I mean, we're running out of time here, and I want to make sure that we acknowledge what you've been doing and how people can get hold of the Detroit Bureau.
Well, they can go to thedetroitbureau.com. Everything we post is free, including the emails which we'll send out, or Twitter feeds, or RSS feeds. You can get it at thedetroitbureau.com.
Well, Paul, thank you so much for helping us last week and this week as well look at the Detroit Auto Show and consider some of these long-range implications of the things that we're seeing there. Paul Eisenstein, the editor of the Detroit Bureau, thanks again for being with us, Paul.
My pleasure to be with you.
Very, very good weekend. It's always a pleasure to have him on this time of year, or really any time of year.